Another day in the war in Iran means the U.S. could be one day closer to boots on the ground. Another chapter in the history of downtown Minneapolis, and this one's a good one. Another Major League Baseball season fires up tonight, and you can only see it on Netflix. And another candidate for NDSU president tells the gathered throng it's more important than ever before to find non-traditional students. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on this Wednesday edition of the Steve Hallstrom Show. Happy hump day to you. Hope that Wednesday's off to a good start, or that it's been a good Wednesday wherever you're at in your day. We're thankful that you chose to hang out with us here for a little bit. Lots to cover here today on the program. Couple of guests with you and me. Today, Dr. Corey Steiner, the superintendent of Fargo Public Schools, took the unusual step of saying, hey, money's a little tight. How about we freeze my pay? And sounds like they're going to consider his request. I don't know why they wouldn't, but it's an unusual one. We'll talk with him about that today. And how bleak are things in public education right now in regard to funding? So we'll talk about that with Dr. Steiner today. Coming up in hour number two of the program, we're going to talk trades today. We're going to have a couple of guys with us that are part of the local contracting scene. One, an instructor for M-State, the other in the home building business himself. In fact, the guy that built my house, Aaron Kochman at Kochman Brothers Homes. Those guys will be in today. We're going to talk about the Herdina Trades Camp, or the Herdina Construction Camp. And it's a camp that specializes in teaching young people about how to do residential and commercial construction. And so we're going to talk about what those careers are like. They look better and better all the time, I think. And there's certainly a need, no doubt about that, and the money's good. So we're going to talk about that here today on the show as well. I have a whole bunch of other very interesting things to talk with you about today. Best thing I heard all day was a two-minute dissertation by a guy named Victor Davis Hanson, who was talking about how the Democrat Party has changed over the years. It's really, really good. A lot of times, you know, you kind of have something in your head, but somebody says it just the right way, and you're like, that is really good. And that's what we have today. A few of you have texted or emailed me from time to time saying, hey, I know you've been talking about the stock market and all that. Would you mind just letting us in if you see something worth buying? And I'm never going to tell you to do what I'm doing, but I don't mind telling you what I have done. And I did do a little stock buy couple of days ago with a company with a stock ticker symbol VRT. They're in the data center infrastructure business. And it sounded really good to me right around Christmas time. So I bought a little bit. It jumped up like crazy. And when it does that, I sell. I'm like, okay, I'll take my money and then wait for another entry point. And I did that a couple of days ago. And I'm going to tell you about one that I bought that did not go so well. So it's not a brag fest here at all by any stretch. But sure, I'll let you in on that 5 minutes if you're interested. If not, you can go do something else for 5 minutes. And I also have data now. There's a lot of, you know, positioning about ICE being in the airports. Of course, every Democrat in Congress says, we got to get ICE out of the airports. Meanwhile, everybody in the airport is saying, hey, things are better since these guys got here, which just shows you how out of touch some people really are, and a few other things here today on the show. So let's get rolling here. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. Vision, Ford, Lincoln, and Wahpeton. There's a reason you're seeing a whole lot of Lincolns in the metro right now, because they know how to do it down there at Vision, Ford, Lincoln. They are the studio sponsor today. You can call me today, 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded. They can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week. Yes, I know it's Wednesday, but I'm telling you, you can still get in this week. Go to valleychristian.co. All right, time for the morning wire. Semi-automatic storylines as we give you a rapid-fire rundown of what's happening in the good world of ours here. And we're going to start with the almanac for today. We will gain today 3 minutes and 21 seconds of daylight. Sunset here in Fargo will be 7:46. Now, the 3:21 is a new marker for us. We've had about 3 weeks where we've been gaining 3 minutes and 22 seconds of daylight. Today, we will gain 3 minutes and 21 seconds. So it's slowing up a little bit, but still going in a really nice direction. And that will be true wherever you are in the Central Time Zone today. In the markets, wow. This stock market cannot decide what it wants to do. If it is going to be scared about the war, not scared about the war, but today we're up. So Monday we were up pretty good. Yesterday we were down pretty good. Today we're up pretty good. So we're trying to figure out exactly where we're going. Dow is up 258 right now. S&P 500 up 40. NASDAQ up 220. WTI crude oil about kind of about where it was yesterday when we finished things up. 88.50 a barrel. Gold today up $142 an ounce at 4,544. Somebody must have bought a big pile of it. It's up about 3.5%. Same thing for silver, up 277 at 72.36. And Bitcoin today up a couple thousand as well at 71,500. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas up 3 cents from yesterday at 3.98. And the gas stations I go to are now about $1.20 higher than they were a month ago before the war started. North Dakota's average price, $3.43. South Dakota, $3.41. Minnesota, $3.44. Diesel fuel today up 3 cents at $5.36 per gallon. In the news today, we start with the day in Iran. The Pentagon is expected to send parts of the 82nd Airborne Division to the Middle East as the Iran war extends into its fourth week. A command element and some ground forces are expected to be part of the deployment, which is planned to be fewer than about 1,500 troops. The move is aimed at a potential for the use of ground troops in the Iran conflict. So far, it's been an aerial assault, relying on fighter jets, bombers, and drones. The Department of War says about 9,000 combat flights have struck more than 9,000 military targets. The second finalist for president at NDSU met with the media after a meeting with school officials yesterday. His name is Dr. Bernie Savarese. He's a vice president for academic affairs and research at the University of Tennessee. He says we should be very proud of our land-grant status. There's only 52 four-year schools nationwide with that designation. He says he wants to continue NDSU's success by making new pathways for working learners, so the non-traditional students. The new NDSU president is expected to be selected March 30th after the third finalist visits later this week. Fargo police held a press conference yesterday saying that changes are being made when it comes to artificial intelligence for police work within the city. The Fargo Police Department chief, Dave Zabolski, discussed the use of artificial intelligence technology and how it relates to the case of Angela Lips, a woman from Tennessee who was jailed in Fargo for 5 months in connection to a fraud case that was linked to her using facial recognition. Zabolski says Fargo PD doesn't have any equipment that uses facial recognition, and they will now completely rely on other entities like North Dakota State Local Intelligence Center, or ND SLIC. I thought that might have been a rapper from Bismarck when Dave Zabolski was talking about ND SLIC earlier on. Apparently, no, it's a bureau that they can use there for intelligence. Zabolski says he was not aware, nor were any others in his executive level, that West Fargo had any type of AI facial recognition system, which they used early on to disqualify Lips as a suspect. Attorneys responded shortly thereafter saying that what Zabolski said jives with what they have seen in the early stages of their investigation. They say it appears that Fargo PD did not undertake basic investigative efforts before issuing a warrant and charges for Lips. They knew that she was a Tennessee resident. We've seen no investigation by officers to determine whether she traveled to or was in North Dakota at the time of the bank theft. The Forum reports today that newly unsealed warrants in the investigation into Isadora Wengel's murder reveal several new details, including that police were tracking suspect Joshua Heights' movements via GPS tracker in January and February. He was arrested February 10th, more than a month after Wengel went missing. The chief of police, Zabolski, says that investigators believe Height killed Wengel in heinous and a diabolical fashion, and some dismemberment may be involved. The new warrants show Height took several trips to his native Otter Tail County in the weeks leading up to the murder that could have allowed him to plant evidence. And investigators have asked the public in the Otter Tail County area, about 60 miles away, to be on the lookout for a large black tote with a red lid, inside which they believe there may be remains. It's just so disgusting, but hey, that's the story, so that's the deal. All right, story of the day. What are the real numbers about ICE and how it has affected things at TSA and the airports? That's next.
Oh, tough to talk over Michael McDonald. But we're going to do it. The show must go on. Did you know there's a realtor in Fargo who charges less commission than most other agents and ranks in the top 1% for homes sold? I was surprised, too, when I heard this for the first time. You need to know about Dan Perrine at James Patrick Real Estate. With years and years of experience selling your biggest asset, your home, he delivers deep market knowledge, expert pricing, tough negotiations, and smooth, clean closings. No gimmicks, no catches, just top-tier results and real savings. Ready for more money in your pocket? That sounds good, huh? Call Dan today, 701-540-3747, or visit jamespatrickrealestate.com, jamespatrickrealestate.com. There is a big debate going on right now in media circles. You are seeing the traditional big media, of course, trying to shoot down anything that Donald Trump does. They hate him, and so therefore they're going to try to make things look bad for Trump. And there has been this big debate going on where some of these big media establishments are saying, Donald Trump's not talking to Iran. He's lying. Well, Pakistani officials this morning confirmed that Iran has received a 15-point proposal from the United States to reach a ceasefire in the war. I do not know what your definition of talking to, but is it really such a stretch to say that the Trump administration, the White House, Department of War, was in contact with the Iranians through the Pakistanis to say, we're going to send over something to you for you to take a look at? And Iran, the Pakistanis say whatever they say in return. But is this not, for all intents and purposes, talking with them? They're going to obviously read it. They're going to take a look at it. They're getting the heck bombed out of them. So it's just another reminder to me of all of these quote-unquote Trump lies that we hear all the time. Trump lies, everything he lies. Every time he opens up, he's lying about this. This is what most human beings would say is a conversation. Whether it is people speaking directly to each other, this is what they do. They say, oh, we have a source inside Al Jazeera who says that Donald Trump has never talked to the new Ayatollah. So Trump is lying. Meanwhile, people like you and me, we just care, like, are the two sides in contact somehow? This is what they do. They say Trump lies all the time. Now, has Trump told a lie? Probably. Probably has. Is it this one? No. This is not what we're talking about. But they want to say everything Trump says is a lie so that they can just take another, you know, strap off of Trump. I am just thankful that there's conversation going between the two sides. I would, if the president was sitting right here, I'd say, Mr. President, you are a smart man, way smarter than me, especially on things of foreign policy. But I would just tell you, whatever they tell you, don't trust any of it. So the Iranians are, speaking about liars, the Iranians are about as bad as it gets. You cannot trust anything they say. And in my humble, feeble, little Cass County mind, I would tell you that the only way for this war to end is a complete annihilation of the regime. And everybody down, if they go 40 levels down, you got to get them all. And until you do, if you leave before you have done that, then you've gone in and done a partial job. And we don't need more partial jobs. It turns out that the bombing they did, Operation Midnight Hammer, was that it? I might be getting my military excursions confused here. But whatever they did to bomb the nuke facilities, I think we all kind of thought that they got just about everything and did what they needed to do. We knew they weren't going to end it for forever, but they were going to put a big dent in it. They were able to quickly rebound. So let's make sure that they can't quickly rebound again. I know this is messy, And I know that nobody wants it. Nobody wants boots on the ground. Nobody wants a forever war. Iran's not that big of an area. Send over the people we need. Yes, it's going to be boots on the ground. I'm fine with that. Because if we're going to do this and we're going to do what everybody says, well, gosh, somebody should have really done a long time ago. Well, we're going to do it. Well, let's do it. Let's not do half of a job and then pull out of it. Now, we only have 2 months, so another probably month before Congress has to vote to keep going with this thing. But for the next month anyway, I mean, just overwhelm that area with soldiers and artillery from above and whatever you need to do. But if you're going to do it right. Don't do half of a job and then say, well, you know, the war kind of got unpopular back at home. At this point, it doesn't matter. You're far enough into it. Finish the job. Finish the job, Mr. President, just like I said to Netanyahu with Hamas. Finish the job, because if you don't, these things, you know, they reincarnate very quickly. So I guess that's my soapbox there on the war. I don't love that I'm saying that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this is nobody's idea of a good time, but if this is what the president said, and the threat was there, and the threat was that they are going to have nukes pretty soon, well, then we have to make sure that by the time we're done doing what we're doing over there, that they don't have any, and that they basically cripple their ability to start over again. They're going to come back at some point, but you got to be able to go scorched earth over there. All right, so story of the day is a little conversation about what ICE has really meant in airports. There is, of course, tremendous posturing on this. The Democrats are saying, we don't want ICE there. They're not helping. They're stupid. They're not even trained well in what they're supposed to do. So why would we want them in the airports trying to do what TSA does? And on, I guess, my side of it, I say, why would we not want to put any asset that we have possible into solving a problem that we have for so many Americans? So to me, it makes a lot of sense. But you're hearing now everybody on big media side, left media anyway, is trying to show why this is not working and why it's a problem and why it's intimidating people and why it's the jackbooted thugs that are trying to intimidate, whatever. Okay, well, I have statistics. And I got this through an AI search today. I used ChatGPT and Gemini, and I said, please give me every piece of evidence out there that shows what the wait times are to get through TSA before I started getting in there yesterday and where we are right now. So here's what we have. In Houston, the peak pre-ICE was 360 minutes. Currently, it's 195 minutes. Now, I will tell you that these are different days of the week. So pre-ICE went up through a weekend, which is typically busier. And yesterday was the first day on a Tuesday, which is generally a little lighter. But anyway, for whatever it's worth, for right now, we've gone from 360 to 195 minutes. That's pretty good. That's almost in half. In Atlanta, it's gone from 360 minutes to 140. In New Orleans, it's cut in half, 240 to 120. New York, JFK, 108 or 180 to 105. Chicago, Ordway, 60 minutes to 30 minutes, and Philadelphia, 45 minutes to 22. So as of right now, it's half. Now let's wait, get the full story here as we get through a weekend. But if nothing else, you're handing out water bottles and helping people with their luggage and making the airports just a little easier to get people and things around. So right now, I would say success. Let's see what a full week tells us, but I like what I see so far. When we come back, Fargo Public Schools Superintendent Corey Steiner. North Dakotans are some of the hardest workers in the country, but right now the state gets paid before your family does, taking a cut of your hard-earned money before you even see it. That's why Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is fighting to eliminate the state income tax entirely. It's time to put you back in control of every dollar you earn. No more letting the government take its cut first. You deserve the freedom to prioritize your family's future, not the state's budget. 9 other states have already done this and eliminated their state income tax. It's attracting jobs and families, and it's time for North Dakota to do the same. Let's make North Dakota the clear choice for families and businesses by letting you keep what you actually earn. Visit AFPND.org to learn more and join the movement. That's AFPND.org. I would entertain some conversation on that last discussion we had. I kind of gave you my standpoint on the war in Iran, And I said, if it requires boots on the ground to completely get the job done, I think we should do that. Because at this point, there's no sense turning back after you go most of the way toward getting a job and saying, well, we gave it a good shot. How about you? You may feel very different than me about this one. I'd love to hear from you on that. 701-271-1100 is the phone number if you'd like to join in on that. Well, we are going to go to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line right now for a visit with Dr. Corey Steiner. Dr. Steiner is in his first year as the superintendent of public schools in Fargo, came over from Northern Cass Public School District almost a year ago, and has led the school system here in Fargo, the public school system, for almost 1 year, and he is in the news, and he's been kind enough to take a few minutes out of his morning. Good morning, Dr. Steiner. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, sir. How are you doing?
I'm great. Appreciate you taking the time to do this. First of all, before we get to the news of the day, how's it going so far doing this job in a bigger school district in Fargo than what you were doing last year?
Well, you know, I would say it's certainly been very interesting. It's been lots of challenges, but also lots of like really shining moments as well. Like I truly am loving what I'm doing right now. It's been a good 9 months. We know there's challenges ahead, but I'm really optimistic about the future of our school district.
Well, and that brings us to our conversation here today. You and your leaders within the school district, the board, are trying to figure out how to save about $5 million from some of the initial projections there. There's been conversation about eliminating as many as 50 full-time jobs and some other program cuts as well. And you came along in that conversation and said, okay, if we got to make some tough choices, I'm willing to make one on my own. And the story I'm hearing is that you have a $220,000 annual salary right now that was supposed to go up to $225,000 in year two. And you said to the board, you know, I can maybe raise my hand first and freeze my compensation where it's at right now. Am I understanding the story, sir?
Yeah, that is correct. I have regular one-to-one meetings with my board president, and when we were starting to dig into the budget issues and trying to figure out some fixes, it just seemed logical that I should be the one to say, hey, I'm willing to sacrifice. If I don't model that behavior, how can I ask others to model that behavior? So I asked the board to consider that and, you know, to open up negotiations for my contract, but ultimately that's the only way for me to freeze the salary. And the board last night approved that part, so we'll go into negotiations. But again, that focus is that I would take no raise next year, and then we would talk about future years and how do we make sure that, you know, if I'm going to get a raise, how does it match what the raises other people in the district are getting? Because it shouldn't be more than what they're getting. I think, you know, we need to be equitable with things like that.
So you, if I remember this right, Dr. Steiner, when you began, it was a two-year contract, and through all of this, it sounds like there are people who have said, hey, you know, things are going pretty good. The guy's obviously got some skin in the game here with what he's talking about. We should maybe extend this and go another year. Am I understanding the details right, that your contract does end after next school year?
Yeah, you are correct. It's a two-year contract. It would end at the end of the 27-28 school year, yes.
Okay. And I'm assuming from your earlier comment saying, I like what I'm doing, that you would like to continue after the current two-year deal is up. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we had a couple board members who had said, hey, what about a potential for a three-year, which is what you can do under state law in North Dakota. I would love that opportunity, again, because not just because you have some security, but more about the idea that, hey, you're saying I'm committed to you, you're committed to me. Now we can do the work that's important for our kids and our staff and the community.
Can you just voluntarily decide to not take your pay without going through a whole restructuring of a contract?
No, I mean, you know, because the superintendent contract is approved by the board, anything that would deviate from that has to be approved by the board. So I don't have that luxury of saying, no, this is what I do, I just won't take that pay, because, again, that's all approved by the board. And so it's got to run through that process.
Okay. Some people would say and could say, well, the guy's making $220 already. He probably should do this or whatever. But, hey, when it comes right down to it, it's easy for other people to say that. But when you're talking about your own earnings, hey, we all have things we want to do, people we want to take care of, things that are important to us. And, you know, whenever you give up some compensation, whether it's a little or a lot or anything, that that's certainly not all easy to do. I'm guessing you had to have some discussions with your family about this and kind of make sure it was the right thing for your family to do because, hey, $5,000 is $5,000.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I tell people I make a very good wage, and I'm very appreciative of that because I know, you know, we know that gets funded through taxpayers and through the state, so I appreciate that greatly. But I did sit down with my wife before we had any of this conversation and said, what are your thoughts? And she was supportive and just saying it's the right thing to do. You always tell people do the right thing, do it right away, and do it the right way. Mm. So she said, do it. And so, I like, for me, yeah, I mean, you can make money, but there are things then you give up, but you know, again, this was an easy decision because as the leader of the district, it should be me saying I'm willing to sacrifice something to get us back to the spot where we're really financially stable going forward.
What kind of reaction have you had to this from people within the district?
You know, I would say it's been very positive. I was out in a bunch of buildings yesterday just visiting classrooms and visiting staff and had many people just stop and say, thanks, we appreciate it. I mean, everybody understands, you know, we're talking $4.5 to $5 million we're cutting. $5,000 is a pretty minuscule number in that. But I think people understand, like, you know, that's a way for me to say, I appreciate what you're doing. Here's at least something I can do too. So it's been acknowledged and received very well.
Dr. Steiner, these are tough decisions when you're looking at $5 million and making the cuts that you're talking about here. Is this because your funding has gone down or is this because expenses have just risen so fast?
You know, it's a combination of both. I wouldn't say necessarily funding going down, but what we've seen is we're steady in our enrollment. You know, if you compare to West Fargo, who's growing in enrollment, you know, that's where a lot of revenue comes. And so, and then also still having your expenses going up. And, you know, over the course of time, you kind of hope like, oh, maybe we'll get more funding and then this will balance out. But that's just not the case. And so we really had to look at it and say, we've seen this coming, and we know what the future could potentially bring, so we're going to have to make some tough decisions now so we're not forced to do this every single year. So, again, we can set ourselves up to invest money in the outcomes that we know are good for kids, our staff, and our community. So it just was the time we had to do it.
We're talking to Dr. Corey Steiner, Superintendent of Fargo Public Schools. Corey, when you take a look at the growth in expenses in schools across the country, I don't have statistics or data, sir, but I have heard people say that we have had a big expansion in administrative things where it's not necessarily in the schools going as much to the kids and the teachers as it is to bureaucracy and more people in the district office and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ways that you have looked at that part of the district to see, is there any kind of overhead bloat, if you will, that could be eliminated? And in your mind, sir, is that kind of the first place you would look?
Yeah, it's a good question because I will tell you it was one of the, you know, the first meetings I had in the district with people. It was, hey, the district office keeps growing. And so, you know, we started looking at our numbers. And part of that was, you know, we might have someone who's a district office employee, but they're actually stationed and working in the schools. And maybe they're coordinating, you know, special ed services, for example. So then it was trying to get down and say, okay, what are the positions that are truly in the district office? Already, one of the first things we did some reorganizations of some staff. We looked at positions when some people resigned and retired and said, we're not going to fill those. And then what we've kind of designed is a year two and a year two, three to say, what will we do in these positions? What will we do to make sure that, you know, when we're adding staff, it's adding staff that are going to directly impact kids. And I also think it's important for people to understand, you know, there are people behind the scenes at the district office that are absolutely necessary positions. They don't interact with kids, but, you know, they do payroll. They do things with insurance. They do things that are really important for a system to function effectively. But ultimately, yeah, we know that we need some reductions in that top level. Because, again, that's modeling. When we're telling teachers, hey, we might add some kids in your class, we can't be adding more people at the top level.
Yeah. Dr. Steiner, when you took the job, you came into the studio. You and I had a wonderful visit for, I think, almost an hour. And I said, one of the things I hear from my audience that I share the concern about is it feels to many of us who are conservatives like the school systems have been a place where some of the culture wars are being fought and that we're seeing one side of that culture war sort of taking over. And I asked you, and you gave a very honest answer, that you're going to be on guard and kind of keep your radar up just to make sure that ideology and culture war isn't what is being propagated within Fargo Public Schools. Can you talk a little bit about what you've looked for and maybe some of the things you've seen or some of the conversations you've had on that matter?
Yeah, it's a good question. I remember that conversation well. I would say from the very first meetings I started having to continuing meetings now to observing classrooms, it's just seeing like, what am I seeing the things that people are saying are occurring out there? And I can say honestly, no, I'm not. But are there things then that, you know, people will reach out and say, hey, we heard that this is a concerning topic in there. Like, the first thing I'll do is say, let's have the conversation and let's get everybody involved in it and let's figure out what we're doing. So it's never been that, hey, no, we're right because we're the school system. It's like, let's have a conversation and figure out, you know, is there a process for us to review this? If they're not, let's get one in. And if we go through the process and it says, hey, this isn't right, then we make sure we correct it. So I think it's just been having everybody be really diligent about making sure when kids come in, it is about teaching and learning, and it is about making sure they get the things they need to be successful, not only now, but in the future.
Well, it sounds like you're off to a very good start on a number of different fronts, including that one. And if you're getting people from the board saying, hey, let's extend this guy, it means that you're getting some good reviews from people on your board as well. So we appreciate the time and appreciate what you do. It's such an important job to take care of our kids who are in public schools. So we appreciate the time and all that you do, Corey.
All right. Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for all you do.
Yep. Take care. Right back at you. Dr. Corey Steiner, Superintendent of Public Schools in the Fargo Public School System. When we come back, Steve's Stock Club. Yes? Some of you are interested. Plus, I want to hear from you. Are you vehemently opposed to boots on the ground in Iran? I am not. But I want to hear from you. 701-271-1100. That's next. If it comes down to it, you only need a simple majority in both chambers of Congress, the House and the Senate, to approve an authorization of war. If you get 50 plus one and then 218, then you can do that. So Republicans have enough votes to actually do a declaration of war after the 60 days, which the president has for an executive order, which they call an authorization for use of military force. So I've been wondering that myself. Do you need the 60 votes in the Senate? Nope, it's just a simple majority. Boots on the ground. It's nobody's first option, right? But if we are going to go to war, which we are, I mean, let's be honest about what's happening here, and we're going to give as much as we have in terms of loss of life, which, by the way, isn't it amazing, praise God, that we've not had any fatalities that we know about now for several days in the middle of a war, and the amount of resources that we have spent on this. If you're going to go this far for something that now we've been told by pretty much everybody, both sides of the aisle have said, yes, they are an existential threat, it's just how we deal with it. If this is what the threat is, and we've gone this far, if it takes actual troops on the ground, don't we have to do that? That's kind of where I'm at on this one. Wondering what you think about that, though. Grant is on the phone, and he would like to talk about that. He's on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hey, Grant, what do you think?
Hey, I think we're the biggest kid on the block with the biggest glass jaw that's ready for breaking. And by that, I mean we have another $1 trillion of national debt added now less than 5 months it took us. So unless we're going to be the oil kings of the world and we can have a dollar diesel and fertilizer goes to less than $100 a ton, I don't see how, that's what it has to be for the American to realize you're going to benefit. We keep hearing we're going to benefit. And then also no more wind fields. And Doug Burgum's there smiling and granting another guy a big wind field, and Trump said no more wind fields. So there's a lot of cloudy messaging yet. We don't really know what's going to happen, but, you know, come Friday, it's going to be hell or high water. And that's the only way it'll work out if we get dollar diesel and 99-cent gas for the Americans to want that. We tried to eradicate our illegal immigrants, and we had two casualties with that, Ray Good and the other guy, yep. Petty. And the Americans lost their minds.
Yes,
so you really
did.
Think that they can handle this? And we've never really suffered. You know, we've never had a food famine in 150 years, 200 years. You know, we've had hard times, but we've never really had a gut-punching plus 25, 30% unemployment like the 30s, we're due. And the writing's on the wall here and there. And the markets just go by what they say. They don't go by what's actually happening. And that's what's confusing. So where's the fog of war there, Steve?
Yeah, good stuff, Grant. Thanks for helping. When people like you who have thought this through get on the phone and add something, it helps me think it through, too. So I appreciate that. Yeah, I go back to yesterday's show. I don't know if you heard the clip. I had Tom Izzo, the Michigan State basketball coach, saying Americans have gotten soft. And that's exactly right. And if we do have any inconvenience, what the change from, back in World War II, our last real declaration of war, is that we have a media and a social media environment that will overamplify everything. And it is out to find someone who is at fault. It's out to pin blame on someone. In this case, of course, everything is Trump's fault. So not only have we gotten soft, but we've also gotten into an area where if anything is difficult, we are going to try to reduce the person who made it difficult to rubble. And that's the problem. And a lot of people don't think it through. A lot of people aren't coming at it like you are and saying, okay, what are we going to do and why are we doing this and what is it that we're really out for? So I'm with you. I said during the last campaign, I said everybody's talking about they want deportations of people who are illegal. And I believe the polling is still pretty strong on that. But, man, you turn on the TV and, like you say, two people die who shouldn't have been in places that they were.
Right.
If they'd have been on the sidewalk with a sign, they'd have been fine. But the American people go nuts about this. And people, again, they've lost their willingness to be consistent in pursuing values and principles. They just go by feelings and emotions. It's why we are struggling with debt. It's why we're struggling with all the things that we are in this country with some of our social issues, chopping genitals off of kids. I mean, it's all a product of us losing our principles and values and not being willing to stand up for them.
Hey, quick question. Well, not question, but comment. But you know how Chuckie Schumer is standing up there in the way? You have this enemy within the wire. So, even Trump's comments last week were taken a little bit out of context. And they're willing to put foreigners ahead of Americans always, because that is the class that's trying to replace the American taxpayer, the American consumer, the American producer. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that. These long lines are because of them. They want you to suffer. They enjoy you suffering. And that's how you explain it from Realville world. And you can't keep sitting there getting distracted, because these normie norms, because of the Josh, the Petties and the Rene Goods, they might change their vote and they'll mess a lot of things up. Though we have to be able, like Trump has to be able to clarify some of these things with still build wind towers.
Yep.
And then we don't get lower oil prices.
No.
Or I would say refined products.
Yep.
Let's say that.
Got it.
We
need
to get that under control.
Yeah, I got to run, Graham, but thanks. Good conversation. Right. Hour two coming up next. I want to follow up on that with something I heard J.B. Pritzker say yesterday. Markets continue to surge this morning. And apparently all it took was for Donald Trump to send Iran a 15-point peace plan. And the Dow was up 381 this morning, NASDAQ up 258, S&P 500 up 52, about 1% across the board. That's a pretty big gain here in early trading. We'll see if it lasts. We've had an up-and-down market week, haven't we? And as I look at those market numbers on CNBC.com, the first story I see: recession odds climb on Wall Street as economy shows cracks beneath the surface. If you just did the exact opposite of what CNBC told you to do, you'd be a rich person right about now. We've been talking about that quite a bit on the show. The pessimists and the experts go the other way, and you're doing fine. Looks like the traders are doing that today. Nobody's listening to whatever this report is on CNBC.com. I want to finish up the conversation Grant and I had before top of the hour break. And Grant brought up some really good thoughts. And one of them was that we just don't know how to suffer in this country and be able to suffer well, go through a hard time, adversity. I think a lot of it goes back to what you hear from one side of the political aisle. Work is a bad thing. You are a victim if you have to work. And you shouldn't have to work. We should give you money for not working. And we'll just get money from some people who have it, even though you can't make the math work on that. We are soft. We are an anxious and depressed country. I've talked to so many business owners who have said some version of this to me, that every young person I have on my staff under the age of 30 years old is either depressed or anxious, and they're on medications for it. Now, life is full of difficult times. We get it. And there are people for which, you know, those diagnoses and the medications are very much necessary. And maybe this is an old school mindset of just how the workforce is changing. But it's, there are a number of things you can point to in our society where I'd say we just don't want to be inconvenienced for something good later. We want the immediate payoff right now. Leadership, I have heard said, leadership is doing the hard things early. So leadership is, it's not all sunshine and roses. Sometimes it's hard, a little inconvenience, a little effort, rolling up your sleeves. It's not a bad thing. It's not even neutral. It's a good thing every once in a while. And you learn something every time you go through adversity. But leadership is tough and it's early. And you actually heard Dr. Steiner talk about that. And he said, when I was talking about that with my wife, doing the pay freeze, she's like, do the right thing and do it now. That's 100% what I'm talking about, this exact thing. And he's doing it because he understands that he's in a good spot. And he can handle a little less money coming in. Yeah, he's doing fine right now. But hey, you know, you give up $5,000 on your salary or whatever that percent is for you. Easy to say, well, he should do it. He is whatever. But leadership is doing the tough thing and doing it early. No doubt about that. So let's counter that with what we're hearing from Democrats about what's going on with immigration in our country. This was J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois. It was either yesterday or Monday. But they were talking, he was asked about the Chicago, so he is the governor of Illinois, okay, so this is his state. He was asked about the murder of Sheridan Gorman, the 18-year-old college student who was murdered by an illegal alien who was here from Venezuela. And listen to what he said here. And this piggyback so well to what we were talking about with Dr. Steiner. Listen to what he says about this murder.
I agree. There have been real failures. Those failures, of course, extend beyond the borders of Illinois. They're national failures, a failure to have comprehensive immigration reform, a failure of the president to follow his own edict to go after the worst of the worst.
Okay. Here's what we have. We have somebody saying, well, really, it's Donald Trump's fault because he said he was going to go after the worst of the worst. And he hasn't done that, apparently, is what he thinks. And he says, I agree. There have been real failures. We just talked about leadership was doing the hard thing early. Where was this guy 2 years ago when we had this problem going on, but we were in the middle of an election race? And it was Joe Biden for a while, then Kamala Harris. We had to try to get him across the finish line. So were we going to say anything about there being real failures then? Boy, I didn't remember hearing it. Do you? Here we are 2 years later, and the American people overwhelmingly have spoken in the election, the polling, and everything about this issue. If real leadership is doing the hard thing early, what J.B. Pritzker just said is the polar opposite of leadership. Waited to see which way the wind was blowing, stuck his finger up and said, okay, the breeze is coming out of the southeast. Okay, now I can agree that there have been real failures. I can admit that. Where were you, Pritzker, 2 years ago? Where were any of you on the left 2 years ago? So we've seen leadership now here with the Fargo School Superintendent. Maybe Corey Steiner should go be the governor of Illinois. I think we'd have a lot better leader there. The other thing I love about this comment is saying, well, Donald Trump has even failed because he said he's going to go after the worst of the worst. And look, this guy was still hanging around. Should have got that guy out of here. Oh, isn't that nice? So Trump goes into Minneapolis to try to find some of these people. And all you get, like Grant said in the first hour of the show, all you get is, we don't want you to get out of here. And that's Pritzker. He would have been saying, if you just stuck a microphone in his face during Minnesota, he would have said exactly that. Get him out of here. ICE doesn't need to be. And now he's going to go ahead and criticize Trump for not getting the worst of the worst out of here. Gee, JB, I guess I missed that press release where you said, hey, Mr. President, yes, let's get the worst of the worst out of Chicago and out of Illinois. We'll work with you. We'll do whatever we can. No, him and the mayor of Chicago, they cannot be any more adversarial to Trump. But here is pathetic Pritzker trying to blame Donald Trump when his entire party has based its standing, its reputation, its credibility, its future, its today and its future, on let's get as many of these people in here as we can. I know there's some bad, but you know what? We need to do this because it's the only way that we think we can win. And now he's got the audacity to criticize Donald Trump. So there you go. In about 45 minutes or so listening to this program, you've seen the best and the worst of leadership. All right, 14 past the hour here. Let's get to the key three, which I'm going to have to hustle through because that was just too good not for me to play. And when we were talking about Corey Steiner and Grant was saying what he said, I said, you know what, I got to play that clip from Pritzker that I heard last night. So, okay, story number one. Minnesota officials, here we are suing the Trump administration for access to evidence they say they need to independently investigate three shootings by federal officers, including the killings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. The lawsuit claims the federal government reneged on its promise to cooperate with state investigators after the surge of federal law enforcement in Minneapolis and are seeking a court order demanding that the Trump administration comply. The Trump administration, says WDAY Radio, has suggested the Minnesota officials don't have jurisdiction to investigate. State officials insist they need to conduct their own probes because they don't trust the federal government. I would say to those people, Mary Moriarty, Tim Walz, Keith Ellison, I hope they somehow, some way will be able to listen to the last 10 minutes of this program. So that's story number one. Story number two, I just thought this was really cool. And if this is true, which I believe that it is, very powerful. The U.S. Army, reports Fox News, has taken a major step toward autonomous aviation after getting its first Black Hawk helicopter capable of flying with or without a pilot. The War Department said the next-generation UH-60MX Black Hawk was developed with Lockheed Martin's Sikorsky unit will now enter a rigorous testing phase as the Army pushes to integrate autonomy into its future fleet. I guess, right? It's drones that are now Black Hawk helicopters. And finally, the average mortgage rate for the 30-year fix increased last week, went up by about 15 basis points, 6.3% to 6.43, so almost 6.5%. Refinance demand dropped 15% over the week before, surprise, surprise. Mortgage demand fell 5% as well. I think this is another one of those things that suddenly gets better once this war comes to an end. We will see what happens. All right, when we come back, I've got best thing I heard all day, but I've got some phone line action going. People want to talk about this here, so we're going to do that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Want to know what you think about this. Have we gotten soft as a people? Have we forgotten the lessons we've learned in the past? That's next. They got food, good food, and plenty of it at PetroServe USA. Here are your daily lunch specials. In Valley City, you get the meatloaf. Harwood Swedish meatballs, West Main Avenue chicken pot pie or Swedish meatballs, meatloaf on 12th Avenue. In Euland, they've got an Asian dish that you're going to love. 45th Street teriyaki chicken. Castleton and Glendon have the pulled pork sandwich. In Wahpeton, the meatloaf, and in Cheyenne on the Cheyenne Street store, chicken fettuccine. Home cooked meal available for you today at PetroServe USA, helping America feel better. We've been talking today about boots on the ground in Iran. It looks like things are moving that direction. And I'm wondering what you think about that. I am fine with it because I think we've got to finish the job that we started. It'd be foolish to do half a job or three quarters and then pull back only because it might mean boots on the ground. Wondering what you think about that. And just the general willingness of Americans to subject themselves to something difficult. We kind of gotten soft that way. If you'd like to weigh in on that, 701-271-1100. Before we get to best thing I heard all day, let's talk to Roger in West Fargo, and he wants to talk about this. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm wonderful, sir. Thanks for calling the show.
Well, I'm in complete agreement with you. We have to go in there and we have to finish the job, because if we don't, that just gives everybody else that's around there that doesn't want to really be friends with us power to attack us or to mess with us.
Yep.
It's like if you run into a dog that's mean, they say not to look them in the eye, you know, but I say, yeah, look them in the eye and let them know you're not afraid. You know, if they come at you, if you know what you're doing, you won't get hurt.
Yeah.
Too bad, anyway.
Yeah.
So I just, if we can't, and yes, this whole country has gotten too soft, and it ain't just because of the war. It's because we have not engaged with the problems.
Yep. 100% right. Roger, you're speaking good truth today, brother. Thank you for calling the show. I'm going to scoot along because we got more folks waiting for us here, but thank you for calling. Let's go to Hal in West Fargo. Hal, have we gotten soft in this country?
Boy, that's for sure. And I can probably even go back to baby boomers being soft compared to the previous generation. My dad was 12 years old when the Depression hit. And I remember watching him when he ate an apple. He ate the whole thing. He ate the core and all.
My dad did the same thing.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, like my wife, she doesn't like the peeling of the apple. She doesn't like the peeling of the potato. You know, cuts the crust off the bread and stuff. I kind of look at her like, oh, you know, where are you from? But
careful now, Hal. You're not going to win generally in these exercises where you're calling out your wife's food processes. So be careful, my brother.
I found that out 30 years ago.
No. But you haven't gotten soft, so dang it, you're going to keep calling her out on it. Good job, Hal.
about a month ago, I heard Victor Davis Hanson explaining World War II and the cases that the people going over and fighting the Japanese had to go through.
Yeah.
And, you know, get done and said, you know, maybe 20-30% of you may survive this occasion. Mm-hmm. You know, if they capture you, you know, you're going to go a long time without getting fed. You're going to be put through the worst misery of your life. And the soldiers basically looked at the commanders and said, well, we've been through the Depression, so what's new?
Yeah, great point.
I mean, if that stuff isn't tough, you know, it just kind of... you know, it'd be great lessons to teach the next generations, you know, not so much to rub it in their face and stuff, but just to say, you know, we all complain about, you know, things have never been so bad right now. And and you compare it to history, and boy, you'd be surprised.
Hal, great stuff. Thank you, my friend, for giving a call today. Appreciate you.
All right,
you take care. That opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. Yeah, go back and read the Old Testament sometime. I mean, you look at stuff, that's when men were men back then. And like Hal's talking about, the Depression, I mean, it's never been as easy as it is right now. It just isn't. And, you know, we get mad when our phone doesn't work or technology, something happens, and I don't have all my luxuries and my comforts. And, you know, I'm not saying that there's not a time and a place to, you know, someone who's depressed or anxious or whatever. I understand all of that. But I think sometimes these things just used to be part of growing up. I really do. Corey in Williston's next up on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Corey, boots on the ground, yay or nay?
I'm a big nay on that. I'm an Iraq vet. And when we were over there, we did a route clearance. So we were outside the wire all the time. And we were told that the Iranian special forces were moving through our AO, all right? And then things got, you know, pretty serious not long after we got that brief. And why didn't we hit Iran then when they were doing that to us 20 years ago? And as far as getting boots on the ground, that's what our Green Berets are for. And we hear about how all the Iranian people want to stand up against this regime. And we've backed other people to overthrow governments many times And why can't we get weapons into these people and let them fight their own war now that we've degraded their military? This makes way more sense than putting a whole bunch of Marines in 82nd on a little island that they're just going to get the heck shot out of them and be trapped there. And it just, to me, it doesn't make sense to go in and put boots on the ground. And when that populace is willing to stand up to the regime, I mean, we've seen it time and time again with all the protests. So that's all I really got.
Yeah, Corey, thank you. And thanks for serving our country, too. And a really good perspective that's helpful at a time like this. I'll let you go, but thank you for calling. Yeah, I guess I just have to assume that Hegseth and the War Department, President Trump, I mean, this isn't a surprise to those guys either. And they're looking at all these things that you're talking about there, too. We hear about the Iranian people wanting to rise up. I just don't know how empowered they're going to be or feel, because if you stand up to them and you get caught, obviously things are bad. And can we get someone else to do our fighting for us? Maybe. But maybe that's problematic, too, and a difficult thing to accomplish. So it's not easy. And Corey, thank you for speaking up like that. And I don't mean to be flippant about, oh, yeah, let's just send guy. Yeah, we're going to lose some people or whatever. But if American troops, and, you know, if you give, you know, the Iranian people a gun, that's not the same as sending an American military member in there either. They're trained and they can work together with a group, and it can be very tactical and I think a lot more effective. If that's what it takes, is maybe a better way to say it. If that's what it takes for us to do what we need to get into the facilities where they're enriching the uranium and to get into some of the underground tunnels and bunkers where we're going to get that third, fourth, fifth level of Iranian regime, then I don't know how we don't do that if we're this far into it already. But it's easy for me to say. I'm sitting here doing a radio show, and I get mad if the temperature's down to 62 in the studio. And I'm soft a little bit, too, on some of these things. So it's easy for me to say, and I get that. Corey, thanks to you and all the fighting men and women who have done what they've done over the years. All right, I'll try to get to a best thing I heard all day maybe before the end of the show. But we're going to talk trades coming up in a camp about residential and commercial construction. That's next. Hey, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton is hiring in their sales team. That could mean the job of a lifetime for you. You can make really good money just by helping people you know find the car, truck, or SUV they've been looking for. Might be used, might be something new, but they got a lot of great vehicles on the lot down there. I'm driving one that was down there not too long ago and love the way they take care of their people. Service tech, speaking of taking care of people, at Vision Ford Lincoln, make more than anywhere else in the 5-state area. No weekends, full benefits. How's that sound? Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, not just a place to buy a great set of wheels, it's a place to put your service career in overdrive. Go to drivewithvision.com to find out more. That's drivewithvision.com. Yeah, you can make some good money if you know how to build things, repair things, fix things, and that leads us into our next conversation. I'm happy to have in studio today gentleman who's gotten to be a friend of mine over the years, Aaron Kolkman from Kolkman Brothers Homes. Aaron built my house not too long ago, and the thing is still standing up, Aaron, so you guys did all right over there.
Good to hear.
Yep. And right. Brooks Peterson is also here, and he's a construction management instructor at M-State. Guys, thanks for coming in today. Talking a little bit about a camp that you've got coming up soon, and Brooks, I know that at M-State you're involved in construction and teaching the trades to our young men and women. And this is something pretty big going on coming up first couple weeks in June. So tell us about the Herdina Construction Camp. Tell us about it.
So the Herdina Construction Camp, we've been doing this now for over 20 years. And it's for students that are in that 15 to 20-year-old age. And during the camp, it's a two-week camp, Monday through Friday, like you said, first 2 weeks of June. The students will be introduced to a lot of different types of trades. During that time, those trades could include electrical, plumbing, heating, framing, roofing, door, window installation, drafting, estimating, building codes, all kinds of different types of trades. And the main part of the camp is to try to get these students to, maybe to ignite a spark inside them to maybe explore a career in the trades.
Yeah. And Aaron, these are good jobs now. You're talking about some things where it used to be kind of, if you don't want to go to college or you don't think you're smart enough, you go work in the trades. And now, man, those are jobs to be very much valued, and we need them.
Absolutely. You can never have enough plumbers, electricians, framers. I mean, finding guys is somewhat hard to find, good guys that you trust. So.
And you said you went to this camp, too.
Oh, yeah.
So construction's been in your family, but at some point you kind of had to have that spark, too. So you're kind of like all these kids coming through now.
Correct, yeah. I grew up, I think, scrapping sheetrock out of houses when I was maybe right when I first learned to walk, you know. So I attended the camp in 2003. And then I've been helping out with the framing and with the Herdina since about 2015.
Yeah. So, what do you like about that camp? What does it do for kids?
Well, it's kind of like full circle. You know, I went through the whole camp and now kind of running projects and managing subs. It's kind of from starting to finish here. So it's pretty cool to see the whole picture here and helping the younger generation trying to find themselves. Like you said, some kids aren't meant to sit in an office. Some kids need to be out and pounding nails and anything like that. I was the exact same way. So this is a good camp to kind of get kids to start thinking about what they want to do and expose them to the real world.
Brooks, what's the word I'm looking for? What a fulfilling job. I love what I do here, but when I leave, there's nothing tangible I can look back and say, oh, look what I did today. I got to make a darn new show tomorrow. I start all over again. You guys, you get done at the end of the day, and you've got something to be proud of and something you put your own personality in. There's a lot of personal pride in that.
Yes, there is. And so I teach in the construction world, and I get a huge amount of gratification, and I really fill my cup. But when I talk to prospective students about careers in the trades or careers in construction in general, that's a big talking point that I use. You know, I talk about, like, you know, ask them if they have maybe a family member that's in the trades. And, you know, if you ever drive around with that family member, what do? They point out all the projects that they've worked on over the years. Yep. And that, so then the question to those students is, you know, why are they doing that? And really, at the end of the day, it's because they're proud of what they did, and they did create something where there was nothing. You know, now there's something there that's tangible. We can feel it. We can experience it, see it, all those things. Versus, you know, if you're working in an office setting and you type on a computer all day, you know, if I come home and I said, yeah, I did 30 applications today or worked on a spreadsheet all day, people are going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
But if I drive down the street and I show them a building that I built, they might be like, oh, holy cow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. So this camp, do you have to live in Moorhead to be part of this? Or tell us who's eligible to jump in here.
Really, anybody is eligible as long as they're in that 15 to 20-year-old age. We've had students from all across North Dakota, Minnesota. I think the furthest west I think that I remember of is Beulah. We've had students come up from like Rochester and places like that, Minneapolis. But most of the students are from the local area. So it's not really confined to just students here.
8 to 4:30 Monday through Thursday, and then 8 to 11:30 on Fridays. You got to be there every day, though. That's the thing. You're not just bopping in kind of here and there when you want to. $250, but man, I've got to think that, Aaron, that when you get done, you feel like, boy, that was $250 well spent, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, with all the guys that are helping out with the industries here to helping these kids, it's great. I mean, for $250, you learn from the best in town.
And you, part of the Coatman Brothers company, obviously a key person in the family business there. I've got to think that this is a great chance for you to be seen by people who do this for a living. I've got to think that you talk to, you know, people that are part of the camp, you talk to people who are doing plumbing and electrical businesses, and hey, there's a couple of good kids, you should get to know these guys. I'm thinking this got to be a pretty good way to get yourself seen.
Yeah, for sure. Yep, we get out there quite a bit, so having the kids see us out there, I've been helping, like I said, for the past 10 to 12 years, and so it's been a yearly thing, and it's been pretty enjoyable. And The camp has evolved, like, greatly since I was in there. I mean, we went from building just, you know, 4x8 sheds or little pods is what we called them. And then now this past, I don't know, 10 years, we've been getting actual projects that we're finding in town.
And
building warming houses or concession stands or whatever we can find. And so, like Brooks was hitting on it, the kids, when they drive around and they see, hey, we built that. So that's a big part of the camp, too. And we like to try to find projects that, you know, around town that the kids can point out that they helped out on.
So, Brooks, how does this work? Do you spend the morning in the classroom and then you go out to the field and get something done?
So the camp is capped at 24 students. And so typically what we'll do is we don't want to have 24 students in one giant group.
Yeah.
So we'll break the groups into two. So we're down to 12 per group. And then so maybe one section will be doing something in a classroom setting. Hmm. Maybe they're learning about drafting or learning about building codes or something like that. And the other group might be off learning about electrical, or they might be doing masonry or something else. So that way we can break them into smaller groups. We can then swap them later in the day. And then with that, too, the camp is run by a lot of professional volunteers, people that are in industry from around the area. And so the key to that, too, is that we're trying to keep those groups down to maybe like three, maximum four students per each volunteer, so that they can get, you know, good individual instruction, and you know, it makes it less like trying to herd cats out
there. Yeah, I could see that. Aaron, how are we doing with the numbers of young people who are looking to get into the trades? I feel like for a while, like we talked about, oh, you got to go to college, and now we've kind of changed that. But I have to believe that it seems like we're short on every kind of worker in this economy right now. How are we doing with the number of young people that are coming into the profession?
I guess from where I'm at, what I see, I don't see a whole lot of young people on the job sites. I guess that'd kind of be more of a question for Brooks with people coming to, you know, M-State or wherever for education purposes and seeing if they end up somewhere in the field. But as far as what I can see in the subs that we're working with, I mean, I don't see any super young guys. I mean, okay. It'd be nice to get some new blood rolling in to take over some of these older guys here. So,
what are you seeing, Brooks? Is there pretty good numbers coming into the programs? Or?
So my program is always strong. I teach construction management. And, you know, I teach at a two-year school versus the four-year. And, you know, I like to think of my program a little bit more nuts and bolts versus like a four-year construction management program. You know, it's learning more what you really need to get out there and working. Now, when we look at like trades across the board, yeah, we're seeing definitely needs for people out there in the field, and it's been like that for decades now. So like Aaron was saying, there's no young people; it's all older people, and we talk about that in my classes a lot, where we're gonna have this brain drain. Basically, we've got these people that are maybe 40 plus in the industry, and they have all this knowledge, and they're getting ready to retire. And then we're gonna have to recruit, and these people that they're gonna recruit, we're gonna have a very narrow window to actually get this education from the older generation of people that are gonna be retiring into these younger people moving into those careers. And what we are seeing, I would say, a lot more recruitment recently. You know, high schools, I should say, have been pushing, you know, the four-year college university track for decades, and we've been preaching it for years and years that we need these people. And finally, I think we're really starting to see the high schools embrace that the two-year track is outpacing four-year track, or even the trades track is outpacing the four-year track when it comes to return on investment for long-term income.
And I can just tell you from my perspective as a business owner here and someone who's in this community a lot, I just think the respect for what you guys do is growing all the time, because people get like how noble the profession is. And, you know, I think there's something of, you know, in the back of your head, the construction guy wasn't too smart to go get a real degree or whatever and swung a hammer just to have something to do. And now you see the precision and the work that's done and how good the work is and how professional the guys are. And we saw that with not just Aaron and his team, but all the subcontractors that came in. Like, these guys are businessmen and they do it right. So I'm really glad to see that catching on, I think, in every corner of our community. So if you want to find out more about this, Brooks, is there something online or a Facebook page?
So I would say the best place you could go is to the Herdina Construction Camp Facebook page would be the easiest.
H-E-R-D-I-N-A, Herdina Construction Camp.
Other options would be you could contact the BIA, Building Industry Association, here in the Fargo-Moorhead area.
Okay.
And if you contact them, they would also be able to direct you to other information.
Okay, sounds good. Brooks Peterson, Aaron Kolkman, appreciate you guys and what you do for the next generation, too. Thanks for stopping in and tell us all about it today.
Thank you,
Steve.
All right, when we come back, best thing I heard all day. Don't go anywhere. North Dakotans are some of the hardest workers in the country, but right now the state gets paid before your family does. That's not right. Taking a cut of your hard-earned money before you ever see it. That's why Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is fighting to eliminate the state income tax entirely. It's time to put you back in control of every dollar you earn. No more letting the government take its cut first. You deserve the freedom to prioritize your family's future, not the state's budget. 9 other states have already eliminated their state income tax to attract jobs and families. It's time for North Dakota to eliminate it as well. Let's make North Dakota the clear choice for families and businesses by letting you actually keep what you earn. Visit AFPND.org to learn more and join the movement. That's AFPND.org. Okay, I want to sneak in my best thing I heard all day before we finish up the show today. Yesterday, on Best Thing I Heard, we had some mindless fun with Jesse Waters and hot women. Today, I'm going to ask you to focus a bit. It's not hot women. It's not even a hot take. It's a careful analysis of what's happening in the Democrat Party. So I'm going to need you to have your good listening ears for this one. Victor Davis Hanson, we've actually talked about him already on the show today, has become what Paul Harvey used to be without all the showmanship. He has, Victor Davis Hanson, the incredible ability to put things in a certain way that makes you understand something complex in a new way. And people like that are national treasures. I think I've told you before, I grew up in a Democrat household. We were old school Dems in Minnesota, DFL, farmer labor, growing up on the farm. We were pro-life, pro-gun, back before you ever really considered there could be any other way. Those things were just common sense. Therefore, it was easy to be a Democrat and be proud of it. We were pro-business, pro-law and order. Nobody talked about chopping off little kids' private parts if they were a little confused about who they were. By the way, most of us were confused about who we were when we were kids. But something has changed in the Democrat Party, and what I grew up with is a million miles away from what that party is now. And Victor Davis Hanson describes this whole thing perfectly.
For all practical purposes, there is no longer a Democratic Party, at least as we've known it for 50 to 100 years. What we're witnessing in Washington as the opposition under Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries is something that we haven't really seen before, is a full-blown socialist revolutionary party. The players of that party that are running things are not even Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries. There are people like Jasmine, the former Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett. There are people like Mr. Talcredo in Texas, Mr. Mondami, Elizabeth Warren, socialist Bernie Sanders, et cetera, et cetera. They're radical leftists, and they believe in a mandated equality of result perpetuated or completed by radically high taxes from people who have been successful and to transfer that money to people who have been unsuccessful, not because of any fault of their own or any gift or success of the wealthy, but because of oppression. And they've created a Marxist binary in the world. There's 70% the so-called white population because they've confused and conflated race with class. That is the oppressor class, and the 30% that is the oppressed class. And the victimized class feels that they have legitimate grievances against the other 70% for not having what they do. And therefore, the Democratic Party steps in and says that we will mandate an equality of result. That is the agenda. And you can see it on all fronts. If people are poor, they want to come to the United States, then open the border. They should have a right to do that. And when they come to the United States, they can become better off than they were in Mexico or Salvador or the Caribbean, because they're going to get entitlements, and those entitlements will be costly and expensive, fraud-ridden, as we've seen in California and Minnesota, and that will require people to pay their, quote, fair share and higher taxes, which is a good in itself, not just because the money is transferred to the people who don't have it through entitlements, but more importantly, you're emasculating people who, quote unquote, didn't earn that. You didn't build that, as Elizabeth Warren said.
So good. So good there in about 2 minutes and 20 seconds. And remember what Barack Obama said when he was in office, talking about business owners. If you built a business, you didn't build that yourself. You had roads and phone lines and things like that. This is a hallmark principle of the left. And I think what he says is worth paying attention to. People should, quote unquote, pay their fair share in taxes, not just because the money is transferred to people who don't have it through entitlements, but more importantly, they're emasculating people who didn't earn that, unquote. You didn't build that. So this, he's 100% right. And I heard Jesse Waters on The Five a couple of days ago when I was out for a run, and he was talking about how Democrats have just gotten so bizarre on all of their ideas. You know, forced vaccinations and sex change surgeries on little kids and taking them away from their parents if you need to do that. And we don't want voter ID. It's like there's nothing normal about that. And I don't really know anybody back home who's still a Democrat. Even my mom is kind of more middle of the road than she used to be. And, you know, she's been around the block a time or two. So it is a full-blown socialist revolutionary party. Mondani. My gosh. Just take money away from people and give it to other people because they have to do that. And it's a whole class race-baiting thing that goes along for the ride. I thought that was really, really well said. Probably best couple minutes I heard yesterday. All right, my friend, that'll do it for the Steve Hallstrom Show. Stay tuned. Scotty and the What's on Your Mind program coming up next. Have a great day and keep on flying that flag.